All in favor, say yay.
Yay.
Yay. Any opposed? All right, Catherine will take the next. So before we launch into a deeper discussion about the data collaborative agreement, good morning. Good morning, Glenn. Okay, welcome. I was just about to give an update on one-on-one meetings with particular data stewards who've been working with us to get data sets uploaded into the platform. So this month, we had several back and forth with the sheriff's office. Their data set did not include zip codes, and so we were working with them to somehow be able to geocode their arrest location addresses, and we were able to find a way to do that. And now the January arrest locations are in the platform for anybody to look at, and we're working on February as we speak. The school board data set that was contributed by Roy back in September has proven to be a difficult one to dissect. And we're still trying to work with the school board to figure out what's going on. Allison and I had had an email exchange about it too, because she's done a little digging into that data at the Central Coconut scale and beyond, correct? So we've noticed some inconsistencies in the data, and we weren't comfortable uploading all of it to the platform yet. There are three that have been uploaded. Catherine, you want to give an update on? Catherine's the one who's been working mostly with it, so.
Sure, so we updated the attack forms for the third, fourth, and fifth graders, just because the total population seems to be matching up in terms of how many children between the ages of 0 to 19 are in these neighborhoods compared to how many students are enrolled in school, compared to how many SCAP scores there were, which was inconsistent with the middle school and high school test scores and enrollment. School populations were 19%. We found the SCAP scores from broken up into failing grades, and then passing, and then five. So, would be two and below, passing 3, 4, and 5 is the highest grade you can get, and that's how the school board presented it to us. So, that information is available for all of the counties.
They're all the neighborhoods in the county.
They're all the neighborhoods in the county. And then everything else we're kind of working on. We were given information about GPA, we were given information about exceptionalities. Different things that just aren't clear enough yet to put on, but that might be something that we could potentially put on the platform if it doesn't prove to be too, like with exceptionality, there might be too few students and that can breach confidentiality and immunity. Some of the five who were given would do that in terms of students that were expelled, students that have been suspended. It's just not enough information to really.
Yeah. So one of the things that we need to decide, either as a collaborative with the school board, is what is a threshold that we work with them that we're willing to show. So if it's less than five students for any given indicator, maybe that's not something that should be displayed on the platform. So
that's one of the issues that if the sample is too small, it really identifies individuals.
It could, yes.
Do you get the basics of age, grade, and gender, or is that not included?
Gender is not included, and neither is age. It's
just grade.
In some cases, the data is deaggregated by grade, but not in all cases.
Yeah, we asked for the data to be by grade for every variable that we requested, but
that many of the variables that they provided, they only provided a single N for the entire neighborhood. And so that's not a meaningful number.
Because it's interesting to know whether there's a group of pre-K students that have their terms like different meanings than students that are in school all day and stuff like that.
The pre-K data has actually the closest you can get is kindergarten readiness, which we requested, but the school district hasn't provided that at all yet.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. The other thing is that data like the data that's about, suspensions, is for the entire neighborhood, which really isn't useful because you do need to know if it's little ones or middle school or high school, at least, if not more specific than that.
Well, they probably can't do this, but for example, take Sawgrass, it didn't have very many children. There were a couple of grandchildren for interesting reasons and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's more kids because of what's happened with new construction and women coming in. But it still may be too small a number to use. It would be too identifying unless they get put a mask on the small number so that you would get the fact that there were 10 children in the neighborhood of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And they were in grade so-and-so, period. That way you know what kind of kid management you had to deal with in your neighborhood. You wouldn't deal with, whether they were smart or anything like that. I don't know. They probably, they probably couldn't do the math.
It could be something like it shows less than 10 or that's the quartile or quintile that's on the platform that shows up in the legend.
Well, part of it is just descriptive, so it's not a problem. Knowing how many kids are in your neighborhood or how many go to each school, there's no reason that you can't know that, even if it's a neighborhood that has an N of one child going to, for instance, that's an important one, to be able to see if anybody from your neighborhood is even going.
Right.
It's good, because if somebody else wanted to go behind you, for instance, from my neighborhood, they want to know if they can arrive, or anybody who makes the argument, for instance, that the distance is what keeps people from my neighborhood from going, well, then how come there are all these people from the beach, which is actually further, so distance-wise. So the demographics probably could be for any end, but when it comes to things that are more indicators of well-being, then that's a different issue. So the threshold is probably going to need to be dependent on the variable, as opposed to a single threshold across the board.
Okay. Did the school board release the data with some, like saying, okay?
No.
I mean,
they didn't.
The truth is, I've been the one that's had every meeting with the school board. Have you had any meetings with them?
Not yet. The email exchange that I had with Roy, he said he hasn't had a chance to look at it yet, and he's too busy.
Yeah. I met with him a series of times before September, and then since then, and I think that the issue with the school district is that they sent an initial pass, but just like we discovered with the county data, when you look at the data, you start to realize, okay, this doesn't make sense, or we need to get it tweaked, or we need to eliminate certain neighborhoods, and there hasn't been that second round. So what we did for the Sarasota Community Studio is we sent all of our analysis, and we said, this is what we're going to make public, and please take a look at it and send us feedback if there's anything that you believe is inaccurate. And
has he responded to that yet?
They did not indicate that there was anything inaccurate. So we're going with that for now, until there's anything to
how much of this stuff is available? I mean, to our DOE,
all by school. So for instance, any school in this district has people from different neighborhoods.
Right. Okay.
So that's really helpful, especially the grade school site. That's where you can see it for every single school. You can see breakdown in terms of the student body, the FCAT scores, other measures. But it's only by school. So this is really about neighborhood. Nobody has it by neighborhood.
I would know. You probably are running into a shortage of personnel situation. Why you get to respond to the consistency when you agreement.
Right. So everyone's going to do that anyway.
And user agreement?
Everyone who registers as a user on the platform to upload data, whether it's about their neighborhood or if a particular data steward who's uploading data set, like if Michael were to upload data somehow.
No, pardon.
Yeah, I was going to say the Florida State Health Department. Michael would click that box that says, I'm reviewing the data as accurate to the best of my knowledge, whatever. We don't have the language for that yet, but
so that will,
that
will
be separate. Or there's the document that Alex is talking about, which is the Excel document with all the layers in it that are being contributed, and who is responsible for each of those things. And their contact information is listed in that document. And that, Trevor is listed as the root source for the county and polygons that they've shared with us. So he is, by being part of that document, perhaps, that he's committed to make sure that as long as he's GIS guy at the county, that we can contact him if there's some kind of issue with the polygons, that there would be accurate to the best of his knowledge.
So if I'm a resident and I'm getting on there and it's, this thing pops up and I, I say yes, I'm going to abide by what, whatever it says, then does that document also, the Excel document, come up as something that someone can review or print?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the document can be held on the platform in some place, but perhaps it's more that if someone clicks on that particular data set and they want to learn more about that data set, Trevor's contact information might pop up.
Okay.
Or not. I mean, what are you comfortable
with?
We can
filter it where it comes into a email system.
Yeah.
Okay.
And make it filtered out to that person.
So it's sounding like, to me, that this is really just the for the collaborative. I mean, which it says, but that so the purpose is really
who's in.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this document. It almost feels like this would be more, not even names. This is okay. Sarasota County. They're going to do GIS data and consulting.
Yeah.
That's kind of the feel I get from it.
Their organization.
Yeah, these are the organizations who are part of, if this is a collaborative now, each organization would, focus out.
But if it isn't an organization, because someone's representing their neighborhood.
Well, I'd say you represent that neighborhood then.
For Trevor, you would be committing to the organization. You're not committing personally, Trevor Malvera, I'm going to upload photos of my neighborhood, perhaps.
But we want this to be available for with that capacity, and let's say I wasn't here and I was just someone that contacted you and said, hey, I live in Arlington Park and I want to be a part of this and I want to upload stuff. Something that could also be given to them. No, because we don't, unless they're going to come to the meetings, this isn't appropriate. Is that?
I was just thinking, if people start, we don't have the capacity to have just citizens coming from every neighborhood. Like, there has to be the whoever's a representative of that neighborhood. They have the meetings with the people in their neighborhood and then bring the ideas to this,
It could be that. Definitely. But we'll get to some structure of roles within the platform users in a little bit. But I do think that it's the purpose of the collaborative. And if we went around and said, who's actually involved in any other collaborative right now? I'm not involved in any other true collaborative. I'm as close as I can come up with professional organizations where there aren't people that are hired to create the solutions. But even that, they're not necessarily trying to produce things in the same way that this is. So this is a different beast. it does seem to me, I hear what you're saying about when there's an organization or institution that one is coming and representing, that that's important to identify. But I would think it would also be important to be a collaborative, that the individual within that group or institution, that the same person is identified. Because otherwise what we're finding is that with some of the institutions, it's like it's a nameless, faceless institution. Like you can't ever find a person to say, wait a second, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, are you not showing up because you're just overloaded and this isn't a good fit for you, in which case, if your organization is still committed, who else in your organization could be here? So I think to have both would be important, but to not have an individual identified at this age in a positive would make it too short.
Well, yeah, there should be probably a primary contact,
mm-hmm.
at minimum for each organization.
So could that just be added under the agency organization primary contact?
Does that feel too bureaucratic?
Well, I think you could have to, because you know, you might have a situation where a neighborhood, say the formal neighborhood, and they're registered in the state or whatever, and then you have somebody who just wants to put in whatever information they want, maybe to support their local business or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have competing information, so you need kind of a point of contact. I mean, in Kona, we have neighborhoods signing and registering once they become members, but they have to have one designee to vote or to give us information because of the fact that we don't want to have competing information. We just want to know who's going to be the first point person and that we can talk to for issues.
Okay. Yeah, otherwise you might wind up with two people competing or more for political power who represents the neighborhood.
It's interesting. That has come up recently. What happens when there's two groups that claim to represent the same neighborhood? So who's the person who's representing that neighborhood on the data?
It could happen. Parker had two different neighborhood associations that were.
Hierarchy, you know, and you could really confidently say this person is at a point in the hierarchy where they can say we're speaking for the organization. I don't know of a single neighborhood in the entire Sarasota County where any individual can say we're speaking for even the you know, small majority of neighbors. I mean, is there any neighborhood? You would find out if there's a single neighborhood where somebody can say, yes, we actually have had more than half the residents in our neighborhood weighing in consistently.
Yeah, and it depends. Usually it's an issue, you know what I mean? And if an issue comes up, then you'll see that Jason Kessmark here in Soto Acres, for example, they have 300 homes. And of course, when an issue came up in their neighborhood, they had like a 95% participation rate in that issue. So they do sometimes do come together when they need to initially a particular issue. And sometimes it's that clear. You know, there's a clear boundary there, there's a clear association, but it's a voluntary organization. So not everybody pays the dues, even though when the issue came up, a rezoning issue, everybody signed a petition, not all of them pay the dues to the organization to become a member. So it's interesting. It is interesting to see.
Well, you also have the difference. You know, some areas are alone. I don't know if they made it illegal now, but that, you know, you have to be a member of the homeowners association. You have to pay dues, and then they have regular meetings. And other ones, like ours, are only crisis that they get people together, and then you know, the dues are voluntary. And there's no ongoing representation. You know, you've got.
He's right, because HOAs are mandated or regulated by the state. If you have a formal HOA where you have common areas and you don't pay taxes and you have to pay dues, there's all sorts of laws they have to follow when it comes to their association and minutes and stuff like that. But then other organizations are all voluntary because they don't have any money. The time they could allocate the time and responsibility. There's the time and manpower to use responsibility to be a facilitator and a collaborator.
So the question, I mean, John, you asked the questions. I think they're exactly the right questions.
Yeah.
They're the questions for the group to grapple with. They're probably questions we're putting out to the many people who aren't here but are supposedly part of a collaborative. Because
it's... You mean they got to make it up? Or, I don't have the time to give you the definition of a collaborative. I'd be happy to respond to you with organizational structure, but so, I could say, yeah, like that, I don't like that.
Someone actually approached me after the last meeting to ask. So I never know what to do when I come to these meetings because I don't know how I'm supposed to act in a collaborative. So could you actually present at the beginning of the meeting what a collaborative is supposed to look like and how we're supposed to act? I didn't do that today. That person's not here either. But this is an important thing to bring up is what is a collaborative? How are we supposed to be acting when we come to these meetings? Part of it is you guys just show up. Sometimes people show up. Sometimes people don't. So we have sort of a core group, but what does it mean to be part of this data collaborative? Allison has expressed that we believe in resident action and decision making as the purpose for why we're creating this platform. The purpose of the data collaborative isn't just to create a platform, correct? Does everyone agree with that?
Colleen, I like what I'm hearing, even though it sounds contradictory. It reminds me of reading, I guess it was yesterday, about the Moat breakthrough on learning about red tide. That red tide grows toxic when it gets hungry, but if you feed it in order to keep it from getting toxic, then there's more of it when it gets hungry again. And so what is the bottom line of the discovery was that, like many other things, it's filled with contradiction, which is sort of the nature of human organization. But as an example, I'm involved in this not on behalf of my neighborhood, but I'm involved because I saw an Ignite presentation that I was notified about because I was interested in scope. And so my particular interest is in developing data from my neighborhood because it's interesting to me. Okay. And I'm sure you're going to get a whole variety of interested people who are already in and who will come in if you get a presentation made to you. But it's definitely important to have some anchors so that the ship isn't all over the bay all the time. And the first anchor is to get a good definition of collaborative, which I think is going to be very comprehensive, at least in terms of user experience. And you'll find when an organization gets bigger, and that includes a whole bunch of different kinds of people, that you will have subcommittees that focus on this and subcommittees that focus on that. But we're not at that critical mass yet. So we have to keep swimming and find out where the anchors are that we need to have in order to keep going.
That idea of subcommittees keeps popping in my head also. It's resident action and informing residents. Seems like there should be almost a separate meeting, maybe headed up through Kona, that really engages the neighborhoods. That's where you get all the input and what you guys explain what's trying to be accomplished with the collaborative. What are the residents' thoughts? What do they want to see on there? Then we have more of a meeting like this, where representatives of the neighborhoods is here. Shares those opinions, what the neighborhoods are expecting, and then maybe there's more like a technical committee, because I feel I'm in a technical support role, offering opinions also, but primarily as technical support. And so if we could, get the ideas from, this is for the residents, get their thoughts, what they want, then we discuss it, is it possible, can we do that? and maybe have, you know, have, like, there needs to be a big group of the residents who are engaged in the discussions, too.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, this wouldn't be the proper setting, I don't think, to have,
yeah.
you know.
It hasn't been thus far.
So it does seem like, even though I think everybody who's been participating regularly is a resident of, like, in some neighborhood, I mean, that's why we do that thing where we go around.
Right.
I mean, Amy talked about it today and saying, so she's taking that sort of orientation to her new neighborhood. But that is part of also what can be built in, so that even everybody who's already participating in the gym sort of neighborhood, right? But to really sort of speak to how you, not just because you, you use the language of they, because again, you know, it's a different thing, you know. It's they, the residents, but not we, the residents, right? But we, the residents of Fairfield County, are bringing our expertise and, you know, with our organizational identification to the table.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of saying, like, you would identify as both. I would identify as a resident of Gulf Cape and as a resident of the Florida Department of Health and Care Association. I guess the only thing I think about that is maybe my interest would differ between the two, or my capacity. Like, I'm not providing your data. Well, our history on data is whatever, but on the Gulf Cape community, let's say I was providing it. Like, as a resident of Gulf Cape, I'm not providing you that health data on Gulf Cape. So I'm not representing Gulf Cape in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But I can provide data on the county as a whole as a representative of
right.
the health
but
department.
You might, if you think about yourself as a resident of Gulf Cape and you say, no way would I ever share such and such about
right.
my neighborhood, because I know that as a neighbor, that would violate, like, I'd never get asked to dinner to my neighbor's house, and
right.
I couldn't say it's something because people get offended. That is important, I think, that it's kind of collaborative, because it's bringing our neighbor identity, each of us, because that's the sniff test for a lot of data. It's, you know, not waiting for other people to be the ones that are, I mean, I hear your point about having more people who are involved as primarily and solely as residents, but each of us, if we're not bringing that sort of capacity to these discussions, then we're going to create what will ultimately be a monster, you know, with good intentions but terrible consequences.
Well, would it be beneficial to the group to identify those core people who would be the collaborative? I'm not sure that my capacity would be on the collaborative. I'm not saying I would or wouldn't, but at this time I'm going to say maybe I wouldn't be a member of the collaborative, but work as a support function, even an advisory group to that. And I don't know if that would be like overarching, so I'd still be part of the collaborative, but I'm thinking like, I don't want to say like a board of directors or whatever, but a core group that is kind of the decision-making group. And that might be you, and it might be Scope, and it might be other people, and it might, I would strongly recommend that it be people from neighborhoods having their input on that. Although, as you say, everyone should be representing a neighborhood. And then there's other people that will work in support functions of the collaborative. So that's kind of how I see my role, and might be how other people see their role too, in that they say they as opposed to we, or you as opposed to us. I see that as I'm providing information, data, I'm a data steward, so I'm providing it to the collaborative. I don't necessarily think of myself, and this could be incorrect, this could be wrong assumptions, I don't necessarily think of myself, oh, I'm a member of the collaborative, so I'm providing this information.
Yeah, I think you just got at the heart of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,